also so glad when there's no one. You know, and there's a, and I feel like, you know, my heart in this is like even the burn, you know, 24/7. We just celebrated our 10-year, you know, 10-year anniversary of this movement that started in my college dorm room. It was just a couple hungry people getting together, is now spread to 200 cities around the world, 30 in the UK alone, which, I mean, almost in everything, including the Olympics, you guys punch way above your weight. Like, I mean, you're not that big of a nation. Like, I think 3 of you can fit in Texas, you know? But yet, I just looked at that medal count and I just laughed. I'm like, how is that possible? Like, and you guys punch above your weight like you're overcomers, you know? And but I was, you know, going back with the Lord, and we had our big, you know, we gathered leaders from all over the world last month and a big hoorah, and we got crazy and lit our hair on fire and committed ourselves to the next 10 years of burning for the Lord. And I said, God, what's next? Like, what nations are next? What war zones are next? And I, ever since I was a little kid, I've been, like, obsessed with maps. Like, I love maps. I have them everywhere in my house. First thing I do when I get on the plane, I look at the map. I'm fascinated over nations, you know? And so I love to get out the map and just dream with God. Where's the hardest, darkest, most difficult, horrible places on the earth? That's where we want to go, you know? And I just get crazy. And when I go with people, like my wife lets me do a lot. And the only time she gets nervous is when I go with someone like Heidi Baker, you know? Because we've literally almost died 3 times together. I'm not even joking. Like, for reals. Like, last year, I'll tell you, you want to hear a quick story? So last year, and this is what I'm talking about, living from another reality, you know? Last year, on the eve of the attack in Paris, which just so, I mean, just gripped my heart. I was in Mozambique, and we were getting ready to go on an outreach the next day. And, oh, I was just torn up in my heart, you know, about the devastation. And not even just the devastation, but hearing from my leaders across Europe that were like, man, we're afraid to get on the train tomorrow. Like, when we don't know when the next attack's going to happen, and it's fear, intimidation. Fear that paralyzes our faith, you know, and our perspective, and it causes us to live like reactionary instead of living kingdom. He who's in us is greater than he who's in the world. And so anyway, it puts us on our heels, you know. And I was just praying, and I was actually thinking of leaving Mozambique that night and going to flying into Paris with some of our guys there and really encouraging them. They were supposed to start a 24-hour burn, 24 hours of worship and prayer that night. And the government banned any meetings together. They had like a curfew and stuff. And so anyway, I was talking to them and really bummed. And then Heidi comes up to me really late that night. Jesus goes, Sean, we got to do this outreach tomorrow. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm just like, got this Paris thing. She's like, we got to come up higher. Like, God is moving in ways that we know. She's like, there's one tribe that I've been dying to reach ever since we moved to Mozambique. She's like, they're in the far remote parts of the nation, and we haven't been able to get there. You can't drive there. And she's like, and they don't have a runway. But she's like, I felt like the Lord told me that me and you were going to go tomorrow. You know? And I wasn't even able to, like, ask my wife because, of course, typical Africa, the power went out that night, and there was no water. And it's just like, all right, well, hope we make it, babe, you know. But so I said, okay, you know, I pushed past the Paris thing. I was like, God, we want a greater reality of what you're doing. So we drove to the airport there, and we got to the airport, and the poor pilots, were like, where are we going? And Heidi's like, we're going to go to this place in the middle of the country. And they're like, where is that? She's like, it's just out here. She's like pointing on a map. It's out here, you know. It's this tribe, you know, and they go, well, do they have a landing strip? And she goes, well, I just called the village this morning. I called the guy who drove his motorbike 3 hours to the village, and he told the guys to start building a runway. So she's like, by the time we get there, it'll be finished. This is for real. I am not embellishing a thing. This is not exaggeration. This is for real, you know? And so the pilots go, well, if we have, like, because the plane's pretty big. It's like a 14-seater, I think, something like that. So it needs, like, the size of an American football field or, like, double that to land. It's not like one of these, like, it needs a big area. And so they're trying to tell Heidi, like, who's the most tenacious person ever in history, it's probably not a good idea. She's like, no, the Lord told us we're going to go. And they're like, well, if we don't have enough gas, we can get out there, but we're not going to be able to get back, you know? And Heidi goes, it doesn't matter. We have to go, you know? And then we go to the airport, or we talk to the officials to let us leave, and they're like, we can't leave. We won't let you leave because there's no runway in, like, 100 miles of this area. And so then Heidi starts getting crazy in Mozambique and her, you know, starts speaking the language. And the Lord told us, we're going to go. We've been here for so long. We haven't died yet. And, blah, 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 and all this stuff. And she convinces, and, you know, I might step on some toes with this, but, like, mamas, like, don't play, you know. Like, there's only one person in the history of the world that really ever changed God's mind. And that was his mom. Mom, it's not my time. I'm not ready to do miracles. Oh, yeah, you are, Jesus. You're going to do it right now. That's for real. Like, God is telling Mary, it's not my time. And his mom is saying, God, it is your time now. That's my Mother's Day sermon when I preach. But anyway, so very, very persuasive, powerful women, very persuasive. So they finally signed off on the thing, and they said, well, if you die, it's not on our hands, whatever. And so we got in the plane, and I remember, this is so crazy. I remember getting in the plane, and just the pilots were just like white as ghosts, you know. They're like, and so we take off, and we're all just in the plane, you know, just praying, like, Jesus, like, and the terrain is really bumpy, you know. It's like not like, it's, you know, it's really bumpy, so we start flying around. We're circling around these villages, literally looking for a landing strip. And out in the distance, Heidi goes, there they are. They're building the runway, you know. And we fly out there, and literally there's like 100 guys in a field cutting with machetes down trees. We circle around about 14 times, and every single person except for me threw up all over the plane. These poor African guys, they've never flown in their life. And they're just blah, 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 you know? We circle around. Finally, Heidi's cut. We're coming around, and they're trying to make sure that the wings are not going to hit the trees because it's that tight, you know? And there's still guys out there as the plane's buzzing around, cutting down trees. Finally, the plane starts coming down, and I go, oh, gosh, here it is, you know? And literally the hardest landing in my entire life. Goose, 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 you know, the plane. And it was like literally out of a movie. So the plane goes, and the pilot pulls on the brake, and the plane skids like that right before a cliff. I mean, it's like, you cannot write this stuff. Like, it's, and we get out of the plane, and we're literally just throw up everywhere. And there's like 500 from this African tribe that are out there looking. They've never seen a plane before. They've never seen white people before. They've never seen what just happened. And they're looking at us, you know. And we're all getting out of the plane, like, kissing the ground. Heidi gets out of the plane. She's like, hey, hey. He loves you. He loves you, you know. So that same night, we walked right into the village. These are animists. They worship rocks and tricks, trees and sticks their whole life, generations upon generations upon generations upon generations. When the Catholics tried to come evangelize, they pushed them out. When the Muslims tried to come, they pushed them out. They've literally worshiped the earth. They've worshiped roots of trees for generations. And we get there, and the first thing we do is we say, right now, bring us everybody that needs healing. Mostly blind people and deaf people. So all of a sudden, you know, we sent word throughout the village. All of these people show up. No swirly worship guitar, glory chords. No Amanda Cook singing like an angel. Just hot, dusty, sticky, middle of nowhere Africa, right? Just gritty missions. And we said, okay. And so we started praying, and one by one, every single blind eye opened, every single deaf person heard. Every single one. And so that night, we sent, and those became our evangelists. We sent them out. They went out in the village. That night, we gathered literally every single person in the entire village in the surrounding area came. We preached the gospel, 100% salvation. Everybody. Come on. Come on. The chief, the head chief of the whole deal, like the boss, you know, and like it's the epitome of masculinity, these chiefs. Like they can't show emotion. They're very stiff. The chief starts breaking down, sobbing in front of the whole village. And he says, my father and his father and his father and his father worship the sticks and worship the trees and worship the rocks. He says, from this point forward, this village will serve Jesus Christ. He is the way. He is the truth. Sobbing in his arms. And so my point in sharing that story is it's all perspective. You can focus, and yeah, Paris happened, and Brussels happened, and those things are horrible. Those things rip our hearts out. But at the same time, the glory is rising. At the same time, people are being hungry. At the same time that there's 4 million unreached Iraqi refugees that have been pushed out of their villages from ISIS and tried to be decimated. At the same time, they're turning to Jesus by the tens of thousands. The light always shines the brightest in the darkest days. Always the brightest in the darkest days. And what we're doing here, and I just want to read this Psalm 27. You guys know this, but I want to just reiterate today just the theology of what we're doing. You know, I don't want anybody to leave David's tent and be like, well, that was kind of weird. We just sung the whole time. I don't know what we're doing. I want you to know that this is literally a returning back to the very thing that launched the church. This is not a new thing. We don't have a one-up on the worship movement. We're not the coolest, hottest, whatever. This is literally us saying, God, there is no other option. Nothing else works. We must have your presence. We must have your presence. We need to gain a greater perspective of what you're doing around the earth, of what you're doing in our nation. We want to be tapped into the realm of heaven. We want to actually live from that realm to this realm and not from this realm to that realm. So David, you know, David's tent. David said crazy things. David also messed up a lot. I find great personal solace in the fact that more sins in the life of David were recorded than any other person in biblical history. He screwed up more times than anyone else. In the Bible, God makes sure that we know about every one of those times. Adultery, murder, pretty big ones. Cheating, lying, stealing, going against the word of the Lord. I mean, David did it all. But the thing about David and the true Davidic heart is that in the midst of those seasons and falling, in the midst of the struggle, David never wanted to leave the place of intimacy with the Lord. He kept coming back, and you see it in the book of Psalms. You see it in the book of Psalms. It's pretty emo, the book of Psalms, right? I mean, we love to sing in church like the 5% of glory anthems, but we don't read the 23 verses of hell before that, right? But David committed to the journey and the process and never left. And you know what's so wild about the Davidic heart? More and more, you know, as I journey with the Lord, I feel like he's factored in our screw-ups. Like, he's not surprised. Like, oh my gosh, they messed up again. Thought they were going to be perfect. Like, he's factored in our faults and our screw-ups, but what he longs for is that we don't disconnect in any season. And David screwed up with Bathsheba, but he ran back to God. David screwed up when he counted the men instead of not counting them, and he took an inventory, and he was told that it was wrong, and he ran back to God, and he kept running back to the place of connection. And that's what we do here. We say, God, in the midst of all that's going on, we're running into your presence for 72 hours, and we're apprehending everything that you have for us. We're not going to sink into isolation, into depression, into insecurity, but we're running. And anyway, Psalm, it's not actually about 24/7. It's actually about 27:4. David was the pioneer of night and day worship, but it wasn't about starting a new program or a cool new brand or, hey, we got rad t-shirts. You should all get them. Like, it was about the heart that burns. It was about the Psalm 27:4. One thing I ask. This is all I want. I know I've been the king. I've ruled the world. All the prophetic promises have come true. But all I want at the end of the day, I just want you. One thing I ask, that I may gaze on your beauty, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze on your beauty and to seek you in your temple. In the heart, the Davidic heart, above everything else,
I was going for a serious moment and I can't do it anymore.
The Davidic heart longs for connection. You know, Davidic heart longs to reconnect back, longs to plug back in, longs through the seasons of the highs and the lows. I mean, welcome to earth. You're in a low season, I promise you, you'll get to a high one. And when you get to a high one, you're going to go to a low one probably. Welcome to life. And it's funny, Christians think they're immune from it. It's like, well, when I became a Christian, it began to get hard. Well, duh. I mean, you're inviting controversy in your life. You're inviting. I mean, look at what Paul went through. It's like it rains in a campsite and we feel like we're being persecuted. I mean, you know, I meet these worship leaders. Like, I do, we raise up worship leaders around the world, and it's been a great privilege over the last couple months to, you know, be a part of the Bethel Music Artist Collective and be a part of that crew, which are all my great friends. But one of the things I think is so funny in the first world is we're just like, oh, I'm just so persecuted. My pastor won't let me play my songs. Oh, he just gives me 17 minutes to worship, you know. But like David had an actual sword thrown at him in the middle of his set. Like a real sword. Like he's about to get to the chorus of the song and boom, you know. Some of you guys know this. When you travel the world, it's really just a tip, you know, write it down. It's really important to keep your eyes open sometimes. When you worship in front of ISIS, open eyes. Open eyes, you know? But these guys, like, and Paul and the disciples, like, basically the commissioning of Jesus, it was a hilarious commissioning. I mean, it was like, hey, you guys are going to die. All of you. Well, maybe not one. But it's going to be so fun. Give me a high five. You know, like, I'm sending you out as sheep among wolves. Like, you're going to encounter persecution, suffering. Like, that's why when things happen in the world, like, the groanings and the shakings and the shiftings, like, it's all happening. But our focus is that in the midst of the darkness covering the earth, the glory of God is rising. We're getting brighter. We're getting shinier. We're getting full of glory. We're getting full of love. We're getting full of optimism and hope. And it contrasts with the darkness that's around us. These are great days. These are great days. I mean, any one of you could walk with me. Some of you need to. Walk with me into a refugee camp of 80,000 strong that have had their lives obliterated from ISIS. You can walk with JJ into Calais, some of these other refugee places. Walk in there, play two chords, and everything changes. A smile and two chords lights up a place like that because it's so hopeless. There's such a contrast. But what grounds us, what connects us, is that at the end of the day, we want the miracles, we want the signs, we want the wonders, we want global domination, right? That's Jesus' style. We want this place to look like that place. Jesus' prayer was that, kingdom come, my will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That's an apostolic domination prayer. That's my end goal, is that earth would look just like heaven. And then I would return back to a place that feels so much like home. That's why we get in these worship times and it just feels like home. You know? There's some smells and stuff going on, but we got air fresheners in our house, not in the tent. But it feels, the presence, it's the most natural. It's the most natural atmosphere for us to live in, you know. So David says this, and then Jesus in John 17, I'm not going to read it. Jesus says, hey, that's a really good idea. John 17, right before he goes to the cross, he goes, my prayer is the same prayer of David, that you'd be with me where I am. You'd be with me where I am to behold my glory. So Jesus reiterates the same prayer that David prayed as the last thing he says before going to the cross. John 17, 24, my prayer is that you would be with me where I am, behold my glory. One thing I ask, that I may gaze on the beauty of the Lord. His prayer, that you would be with me where I am. And you see this, the heart of David. Why does David shine through the Bible like none else? Because he was the man that carried this burning desire in an inferior covenant, in an inferior day. He had the audacity to go, hey, this is really crazy idea. What if we just never stopped singing? Anybody with me? Anybody with me? You know? But here's the thing. He was the king, so he could just do it. And he says, you know, my dream as the king, I just want to, and I think I've shared this story before, but going into Israel, seeing the you know, the palace of David is just such an eye-opening thing, you know? Because we use his name on a logo, and, you know, and we call this event after that because it is the Davidic heart. But when you go to his actual palace in the city of David, you'll see that, and I think it was last year or the year before, they just uncovered all of these stands, like right in front of the steps of his palace. There were these stands there, and below the stands, they actually found musical instruments that were like, you know, some of them were broken into pieces, but they were all around these stands. And archaeologists are beginning to say that those stands were actually was where musicians were playing nonstop right at the threshold of David's house. He was absolutely addicted. He didn't just like the latest worship CD when it came out and played it. He was obsessed. He was psychotically obsessed. You know, you look for a guy that has balance in his life, balance. David had no balance. And I know that's a big thing, like and there's some truth to that. We need to have balance, not too much worship, because it's, you know, but I'm not even going to go there. It's like, every year we get complaints, like, why isn't somebody preaching, you know, and it's like, he is the message. Like, he is the message. There's no preaching in heaven. There's no overheads in heaven. He's the message. So we're actually entering in to a heavenly reality, and I'm not against preaching. That's what I'm doing right now. But to have this time, and I my encouragement like this, I was just in Morocco two weeks ago, which I say this every time, like, I'm really on this nation's kick because you guys have the most phenomenal history of impacting the nations of the world. It's in your blood. And right when people are trying to draw back and scared about ISIS and scared about this and scared about this. God's saying, no, I'm sending you out with that fiery British wild spirit that goes to the ends of the earth, even with your white skin. You go to the hot places, you know. I can always spot, you know, British missionaries in those countries. They're always sunburned, you know. But I love it. I just love it, you know, that they would sacrifice, you know, and go to these places. And there's this spirit, you know, and I feel like that out, there's no other option when you encounter the beauty of Jesus like we're doing. You just want the whole world to experience this. And you just start to dream, you know. And I mean, many of you guys, you don't even have to go around the world. You just have to go next door. This land is so rich with ethnicity and diversity. A lot of this stuff that we're sharing, it's actually caught more than it is taught. That's the thing about the prophetic spirit, the heart of David. It's like, well, teach us theologically. And we do. We have classes and we train people and we do all that stuff. But sometimes you have to get into a place like Luke 24 where you look to somebody and go, doesn't your heart burn too? Every time he's with us, my heart just burns. That's one of the most profound statements in the New Testament is another dude looking at another dude. They were both used to be depressed. They both used to be hopeless. And they looked at each other and they went, my heart burns. Dude, mine does too. Let's take a selfie. You know, it's like, that's what happens when we're in this atmosphere. And that's what's supposed to happen. As we look at each other, and last night, man, I just wanted to weep on stage because people were ministering to each other and people were getting lit up, and I heard some shrieks. I think some Leviathan demon things went off. We don't want them here. They went off, you know, but people were getting freed and they were getting delivered, and every year we see an increased momentum of that, and people are getting healed and people are getting touched, and pretty soon these gatherings, we're going to be sending entire groups into the nations, into the middle of war zones, into the middle of red light districts. That's the goal, right? Not that we have a cool worship thing that we feel warm and fuzzies, but we see a vision of Jesus and we go, oh, I have to go. I have no option. I want to read one more verse to you guys and then pray over you. Which verse should I read? All right, turn to Isaiah 42. No, sorry, Isaiah 35. So when I was praying about this year, really felt the Lord gave me this verse about the Lord's response. Like worship, you know, Mike Bickle was just with us for our 10-year thing, and he's so practical, you know. He just breaks everything down. You know, worship is singing to God what he tells us to sing to him. It's like we worship according to his pattern of worship. Like, why do we shout? Because it says to shout. Why do we dance? Because it says to dance. Like, we're not making this stuff up, you know, because we're outgoing people or because we're loud Americans. That's just what we do, you know. There's actually a biblical model that transcends our culture. When I go into Switzerland, they go, we're just reserved people, and we're just, and I go, yeah, your trains are on time, and I appreciate that. Like, way more on time than here. But don't be more attached to your culture than you are the kingdom of heaven. Like, I mean, I love America, and I love the UK, and I love the countries we're all from, but like, we don't promote nationalism above the kingdom. Amen? Like, the kingdom trumps all. The kingdom is what reigns supreme. The kingdom is what brings us all together like this, not different colors, flags of our nations. And so there's a kingdom, like, prescription for how to worship. Some people are like, you know, well, everyone worships in their own way. Some like to worship when they're sitting down. And yeah, I have moments too where I like to be contemplative. But there is the shouting. But there is the dancing.
But the Bible says 87 times it commands us sing a new song. So like all of those need to be in our worship diet. Like we need to have theological room for all of those because we're called to do all of them. Amen. Introverted people are called to dance. Dancer swirly people are called to be, you know, mystics. It's funny, Amanda, we were talking last night, you know, and she's like, you know, Steph has always been like, you know, Steph's just like the crazy one. But Amanda's like way more, I joke her about being emo, you know, she's way more like, I just want to get next to the piano and put my dark hair down, you know, and sing beautifully, you know. But she's like, I don't know what happens to me when I come to David's tent. She's like, I just start dancing like a drunk giraffe, you know, being crazy. It pulls it out of me, you know. And, you know, Jeremy said the same thing. Like, we've promoted and created an atmosphere, which I really believe is biblical worship. You know, it's David getting down to his underwear, which we're all going to do tonight. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, we crowd surfed. What's the next thing, you know? It's like, I mean, his whitey tighties. He was spinning around, you know? It's like, the disciples, when they were every time they were persecuted, you know, they didn't go and you know, get in a corner and go, oh, I feel so bad for you. You need to get a sozo. You need to get, and I love sozos. But the disciples marched out of their persecution and started dancing through the streets, saying, I can't believe we get to suffer for Jesus. That's why we dance through war zones. That's why we sing through red light districts. That's why we go to the craziest parts of London. We play our songs, we smile, and we watch God show up. Isaiah 35, verse 1, it says, the desert and parched land will be glad. The wilderness will rejoice and blossom. Like the crocus, it will burst into bloom. It will rejoice greatly and shout for joy. OMG, that's a lot of shouting and rejoicing and dancing and craziness. The glory of Lebanon will be given to it, the splendor of Carmel, of Sharon. They will see the glory of the Lord, the splendor of our God. Strengthen. Now, this is our response. This is what we can do. Strengthen the feeble hands. Steady the knees that give way. Say to those with fearful hearts across England, say to the BBC-infused, paranoia-driven people, what's going to happen to our nation now? We're leaving the EU. Ah, you know? I'm serious. I'm just going to, I know I don't know everything, but I was in this pub the other day, a couple months ago, and these young British guys came in, and they were just freaking out about this, you know? They were just like, our country sucks, you know? We're going to crap. Our currency's not going to be worth anything. And they were sitting, I think they were looking for us to go, oh, that's so, you know? And I looked at them, and I said, you know, you're still alive here. Like, they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, yeah, the pound's gone down like a little bit. It's okay. Like, still like expensive to live here. They're like, yeah, yeah. And I was like, you know, it's just the government. Like, when have we ever expected a government or a secular entity to be the savior? Yet our emotions are so attached and connected. And I'm speaking as American. We're on a whole nother level. I mean, like, we're in an election season, and it's cray-cray in my country. You know, we get fired up about this stuff because our U.S. Constitution is Scripture. You know, like, and so it's a big deal to us, you know. But what's crazy is that when we detach from that, you know, and we begin to say to those with fearful hearts, be strong, do not fear, your God will come. Everything he said he's going to do, he's actually going to do. Like, we can believe it. And, you know, sometimes it's more fun the harder it gets, because it's like, oh, I can't wait to see how he's going to show up. I don't know how he's going to get us out of this one, but it's going to be awesome. It's going to be a story for generations. With divine retribution will come. And it says that after we say, strengthen the feeble hands, after we say, steady the knees that give way, this is our part, after we say, be strong, do not fear, then it says, verse 5, then the eyes of the blind will be opened. After we say, I'm not going to live in the reality of Paris, that is horrible, but that is not my reality of the kingdom. God is doing a lot around the earth. The enemy is doing a lot. God is doing a lot more. And when we say, I will say to the fearful hearts in an unreached village, rejoice, and then guess what? Blind eyes are open. Because somebody went. Somebody stood there. Then the lame will leap like a deer, and the mute tongue will shout for joy. I've heard in David's tent so far, like two or three people have gotten out of wheelchairs. Isn't that awesome? Water will gush forth in the wilderness, the streams in the desert. The burning sand will become a pool, the thirsty ground bubbling springs. And a highway will be there. It will be called the highway of holiness. Verse 10, they will enter Zion with singing. Everlasting joy will crown their heads. Gladness and joy. Well, Sean, you're just always on this joy thing. It's just so much joy. Joy. That's because that's the end result. That's the takeaway. It's joy. It's joy. Everlasting joy will crown their heads. Gladness and sorrow and joy will overtake them. Sorrow and sighing will flee away. And so my message to you and your message to your nation is be strong. Do not fear. Our God will come. Be strong. Do not fear. Our God will come. Our reality is Psalm 27:4. Our foundation, our place of connection. One thing I ask, we gaze on your beauty. When we gaze on you, we cannot be depressed. We cannot be fearful. We cannot be hopeless, because you're so beautiful. Ah, you know? You're so glorious. You're so big. And we actually don't overestimate evil and underestimate God. We underestimate evil and try to overestimate God. So I want to pray for you. Let's stand up. It's funny, I'm speaking about joy to some of the most joyful people in the country, but we can all use an upgrade, you know? Yeah, let's just put our hands up. Say this with me. Be strong, do not fear. Your God will come. Say it again. Be strong, do not fear. Okay. Sorry, we're gonna do this once again. I'm gonna get all German on you, because I am German. We're gonna organize this. So we'll say, be strong, pause, do not fear, pause, your God will come. All right? All right, here we go. One, two, three. Be strong, do not fear, your God will come. One more time. Be strong, do not fear, your God will come. Now let's shout. Woo. Thank you, God. You're gonna come. You're gonna come. You're gonna come. All right, let's go dance in the rain. Love you guys. Give someone a hug. Say joy, joy, joy.